This is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, April 30th, the last day of April, 2014. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Christina Thomas. Live on stage in Northwest Arkansas presents television and stage star Hal Linden and his seven-piece band as they perform America's songs and Broadway hits May 4th at 2 p.m. in the Arend Arts Center in Bentonville. Tickets and more information available by calling 855-9997 or on the web at liveonstagenwa.com.
Safe water ensures good health and quality of life. The Beaver Water District, a member of the American Water Works Association, and its partners monitor and protect Beaver Lake, the drinking water source of Northwest Arkansas. Drinking Water Week is May 4th through the 10th. Consider pouring a glass of water and hailing a toast to Beaver Lake. You drink it every day. More information available at bwdh2o.org.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, Attorney General Dustin McDaniel weighs in on several lawsuits and the electric chair. Also, educators teach children the importance of community service through the Chicks for Children program.
Plus, Walmart hosts a sustainability product expo. Mission of Mercy seeks dentists to volunteer their time. A reality show looks to cast Eureka Springs residents and more.
But first, as cleanup continues from a tornado that caused extensive damage, Arkansas was notified yesterday that President Obama has approved a major disaster declaration for Faulkner County. Governor Mike Beebe says the declaration will give the maximum disaster assistance that federal law allows.
Certainly the public assistance is something that those communities and that the public agencies will need to help defray costs of overtime and to help rebuild some infrastructure needs. Then the individual assistance is available for people with certain limited caps, either to supplement their insurance or in some cases when they didn't have any insurance to provide at least some relief.
Under the major disaster declaration, federal funding assistance will be available to affected individuals, state and local governments, and certain nonprofit organizations. Meanwhile, Governor Beebe says the cleanup continues, especially in the cities of Mayflower and Valonia.
I don't want to speak too soon, but I think most of the rescue has been accomplished. I think now they're in a different mode. We haven't heard, or I haven't heard, anything specific about anybody missing. So presumably everybody's accounted for, and now we're in obviously a stage of cleanup, trying to restore basic services.
Utility crews have begun replacing power poles that were snapped by the storm. Temporary cell phone towers have been erected, and cellular companies are offering places in Valonia and Mayflower where residents without power can recharge their phones.
Officials say cases of child abuse seem to be on the decline in Arkansas. Kate Luck with the Arkansas Department of Human Services says the most recent report they have on child abuse cases from the 2013 fiscal year showed that Arkansas is doing better.
We did have fewer cases that we investigated than the year before. In 2013, we investigated 33,353 child abuse maltreatment investigations,
compared to about 35,000 cases in 2012. She says one factor in the fewer number of abuse cases is a new program in which the state is participating called Differential Response, which looks at low-risk maltreatment investigations.
Those would be things like maybe inadequate food or environmental neglect, things where the child is not in immediate danger, but the situation can definitely be improved.
Last year was the first in which differential response was implemented in Arkansas. According to the Department of Human Services, the program is centered around engaging families and takes a community approach to assessing family needs and services.
Construction of the Don Tyson Parkway interchange in Springdale will result in a temporary road closure during the next few days. According to the city, 48th Street will be closed to through traffic at the intersection with Don Tyson Parkway from 9 o'clock tomorrow morning through 10 o'clock Sunday evening.
Van Buren-based USA Truck may still be in the red, but the trucking company's losses are trending lower. According to the City Wire, the company recorded a loss of more than $1.5 million during the first quarter of 2014, which is markedly better than the nearly $2.5 million loss reported during the same quarter in 2013. Total revenue increased year over year by just more than 10% to nearly $145.5 million. Officials with USA Truck pointed to the company's ongoing turnaround plan as a reason for the declining losses.
A new index ranks Northwest Arkansas's Big Four cities at the top in the state for economic activity. According to Talk Business Arkansas, the Arkansas Tech Business Index is a comprehensive measure that provides a snapshot of economic activity in 16 of the state's cities. The index is based around an average of 100, and cities ranked above 100 are doing better economically than the state average for the past 5 years. The index was launched earlier this month and measures labor conditions, the housing market, construction activity and sales, and consumer spending. Bentonville topped the index with a score of 108.6, followed by Rogers and Fayetteville with scores from 103.7 to 103.5, and Springdale with a score of 102.3.
A new endowed scholarship has been established at the University of Arkansas. According to the university, the scholarship is funded by a $500,000 gift from Betty and the late Merle McKinnon Haga of Riverside, California. The mother and daughter both worked in elementary education for several years, and the endowed scholarship bearing their names will go to a non-traditional student in the College of Education and Health Professions who is pursuing a degree and intends to become a K-12 teacher.
The Northwest Arkansas Naturals last night won the first of 4 games in Springfield with a final score of 9-7. Play against the Cardinals continues today. The Razorback baseball team was also in Springfield yesterday. Arkansas defeated Missouri State 4-1, putting the team at 29-18 on the season. The Razorbacks continue road play this weekend with 3 games against 10th-ranked Ole Miss.
Mostly clear tonight with lows from 34 in northwest Arkansas to 40 in the Arkansas River Valley. Mostly sunny tomorrow with highs from 61 to 66 throughout the listening area, and mostly clear tomorrow night with lows from 35 to 40. This is Ozarks at Large. It's always busy for Attorney General Dustin McDaniel. He was elected to the state's top legal post in 2006. He'll finish his final term at the beginning of 2015. The general had several opinions on his mind when Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas recently sat down with him.
Big development on Thursday morning. Obviously, you have petitioned for rehearing the Risperdal ruling from the Arkansas Supreme Court. They denied your motion to rehear that case. I guess your immediate response to that?
Well, I'm not surprised. I'm certainly disappointed because the rationale that the court used was completely new and foreign to the case, an issue that was never raised by any of the parties over the last 7 years. And they now create, in every case in Arkansas, the potential risk of malpractice for lawyers because they say you can no longer trust what's printed in the law books. The law that we've been litigating has been printed in the red leather books for the last 21 years, and no one ever questioned it. In fact, the defendants litigated on the basis of what's in the law book and discussed it in depth. Now, they questioned how we applied it. They questioned their actions. They offered a number of defenses, but never once did they say that somehow or another we should all be required to go back to the basement of the Secretary of State and dig out the original act and determine whether or not the subsections that were divided into a paragraph were appropriately done. The Supreme Court says now that not only is that the way the law should be read, and the only way you would know it is if you completely disregarded what's in the book and you went to the Capitol and pulled out the old act.
And this gets to the point that the Arkansas Code Commission and the way that they take the laws that are passed by the legislature and integrate them into the books that are the law books. Does that process need to change? I mean, is this a clear-cut example of having to do something different here?
No, the system is perfectly formulated. The Code Revision Commission is authorized by law. They're reviewed by the General Assembly. They have linguistics experts and a team of lawyers. Everything they did was perfectly appropriate. The Arkansas Supreme Court has the reputation of being a results-oriented court. They get whatever result they want, and they craft the law to match what they want done. And in this case, They came up with something that no one had even argued. It undercuts the credibility of our court, and it completely takes away from the Attorney General the ability to ever go after a drug manufacturer, no matter what they did or how guilty they are. In this case, the drug manufacturer pleaded guilty to a federal felony and paid $2.2 billion in fines, and I'm told we're never allowed to prosecute them or anyone else.
Do you have some other pending cases right now that you think could be affected by this interpretation by the court?
I guess every case in Arkansas right now could be, because what they're saying is you can't trust what's printed in the books.
What is your next legal recourse? What do you have in terms of any other options? Are you at the end of the road in terms of this, or can you start over with another case?
No, you're at the end of the road. That element, the Medicaid fraud element of this case, is done. There's still a multi-million dollar Consumer Protection Deceptive Trade Practices Act case. We will immediately begin the process of trying to get that settled or set for trial, and maybe settled. Who knows? That was accidental, but it may be accurate, because the real bulk of the case was the Medicaid fraud case, and that's gone.
Let's talk about something else that's come up. Obviously, there are a number of people that are wanting to replace you as Attorney General. We've got one Democrat, three Republicans. The Republican primary seems to be the most spirited right now in terms of the attention. One of the candidates, David Sterling, has advocated for pulling old Sparky out, the electric chair, and bringing it back in terms of death penalty cases. What's your take on the use of the electric chair?
Well, first of all, I think that the litigation challenges that we're facing now on lethal injection would be exponentially increased if we attempted an electric chair. So take the policy out of it, whether it's a good idea or a bad idea, or whether it's barbaric or whatever. I don't think you could legally ever get to where the point a federal court would let us use an electric chair. But the politics do matter, and I noticed that Curtis Coleman and Asa Hutchinson both said that they thought that an electric chair would be not a good idea and not the right thing for Arkansas. I certainly tend to agree with that, although I still am a strong supporter of the death penalty, and I'm still doing all that I can to see the legal hurdles removed and the sentences carried out. But I think that, honestly, if we were going to go to a more antiquated and potentially more publicly offensive but maybe more legally defensible method, the only one that my fellow AGs and I think could meet some of the standards would be a firing squad. But I don't think that the voters, I don't think the general public is at all comfortable with the gruesome nature of a firing squad. So we're really in a difficult spot on death penalty.
Any resolution for any other type of, drug-induced death penalty carrying out?
The manufacturers won't sell it to us. The manufacturers don't have any supply. The ones that do want to sell it to us don't have any supply. The compounding pharmacies that have attempted to provide product in other states have recanted that decision and have asked to get the drugs back because their pharmacies are being protested. Mm-hmm. The questions about whether or not a doctor is required to administer the injection, no matter where the drug came from or what kind of drugs in the syringe, they want to remain anonymous. The American Medical Association says that it's unethical for them to contribute to the taking of a healthy life. Not the Freedom of Information Act would cause the release of the names, but the litigation in every case would. There's no way to guarantee the secrecy, confidentiality of either the supplier of the drug or the executioner. It's a very difficult place we're in legally.
That was Roby Brock from our content partner, Talk Business Arkansas, speaking with Attorney General Dustin McDaniel. More information is available at talkbusiness.net. Support for Talk Business Arkansas on Ozarks at Large is provided by AT&T, challenging drivers to take the pledge to never text and drive. No text is worth the risk. More information at itcanwait.com. And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at bankozarks.com.
And the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. from the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road. The Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. Coal, oil, natural gas, hydropower, and renewables. More at AECC.com. And the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. More at ArkansasStateChamber.com.
Fleming discovered penicillin, the Curies discovered radium, and Einstein discovered that it was all relative. I'm Ira Flatow. On Science Friday, I'm hoping that you'll discover the latest advances in science and technology when we talk to people who make them and find out what it all means to you. That's on Science Friday from PRI.
Listen Friday from 1 to 3 p.m. to 91.3 FM.
Student teachers at the University of Arkansas have been working on a service learning project to teach children the importance of community service.
So we helped develop the curriculum, and the curriculum idea really was to help teach these kids about how to give back to people around the world, and especially people that are in need. The core of it is to give back to someone else outside of our area, right? So it teaches these kids, using our lessons, how to give to someone who is less fortunate than we are.
That story's coming up in about 9 minutes on Ozarks at Large.
Yesterday, many of the world's largest companies declared specific goals for subscribing to more sustainable practices at an event hosted by Walmart and Rogers. Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums was in Rogers yesterday afternoon and has more.
Yesterday, the John Q. Hammond Center in Rogers served as the epicenter for the future of retailing and sustainability. The world's largest retailer, Walmart, hosted a sustainability product expo with hundreds of vendors explaining their packaging, shipping, and product solutions.
The band itself is made from natural rubber, so it's a crop. It's highly renewable. The band itself also lasts for years in service, so it can be reused.
As you can see, we are not only providing the consumer products, like laundry detergents and the beauty care products like soap and shampoos and all that, but also half of the company is in the industrial side.
And with it, we've taken the label, the stale packaging, replaced it completely with digitally imaged front and backside. On the front,
the expo began with a high-profile roster of corporate CEOs joining Walmart's CEO, Doug McMillon, listing sustainability goals and projects. Companies including Coke, Pepsi, General Mills, and Kellogg's had details about new or existing plans to reduce emissions and increase sustainable farming practices. Tuesday afternoon, Kathleen McLaughlin, the president of the Walmart Foundation and the senior vice president of sustainability at Walmart, sat down to talk about the announcements and the goals behind the Sustainability Product Expo.
We're very excited. We have about 3,000 suppliers with us today. And they're folks that we work with day in, day out to bring products to our customers. And what's exciting about today is it's a chance for them to showcase their sustainable products, the work they've been doing on sustainable packaging, and also what lies behind those products. How did those things find their way from the farm or the factory or the ocean to the shelf? And what happened at each step along the way? And what are people doing about it to make it better? And that's the real work of this. We've been working for quite some time with many of these folks, and today we signed some formal agreements with a number of them to accelerate what we're doing and increase the sustainability of the products and the whole supply chain.
Let's talk about some of those agreements, because what do you have firm figures for what this could mean as far as changes or differences?
Yes, we do. So, for example, this morning we signed some agreements with suppliers pretty far up the chain, folks like Cargill and Monsanto and Dairy Farmers of America, and then some of our major manufacturing partners, so people like Kellogg's and General Mills and Pepsi and so on, about specific acreage that they're going to set aside to work on incrementally to improve farming practices in ways that are much more sustainable. So it's 10 million acres. We have very specific targets we've set out with them for greenhouse gas reduction and other impacts. So these are things like reducing fertilizer, reducing pesticides, reducing water, using technology to improve yields so that we can grow more food on less acreage and have less of an environmental footprint.
There is a sense of networking here. I mean, I know that often corporations or companies want to be protective of their intellectual property, even if that includes how to make something more sustainable or less expensive to produce. But there does seem to be a sense of sharing ideas.
Absolutely. A word that's been thrown about a lot today is the word pre-competitive. And that seems to be the buzzword, which is, you know, basically these are technologies that it's in everybody's interest to share because they're going to help the world address some pretty severe challenges we have around drought, around greenhouse gas, around toxicity, and so on. We live in a highly interconnected world. It's to nobody's benefit to operate in isolation, certainly in this arena. So the more we can share with each other, the better we'll be able to go about our business and really preserve the world for our children and our children's children.
Were there negotiations with PepsiCo or Kellogg's or General Mills?
Yes. I mean, we're constantly negotiating at Walmart with suppliers. That won't surprise anybody. And that's just sort of the way it works with all retailers and their partners. But what's exciting is the kinds of sustainability projects we're talking about today are in many cases things we've been collaborating with folks on for years. And with respect to the particular agreements this morning, the last few months we've had very intense, I would say more joint problem solving rather than negotiations about what could we do here. And the dynamic is very much, you know, Kellogg's, they're working on rice for their Rice Krispies and they've got so many acres and they've been trying to figure out ways to optimize the footprint there. We're working on some things with them and with others in related areas. How can we share what we've got? What would be a joint commitment we could make? It's much more that sort of friendly, collaborative tone about what's possible.
Is it measurable to know what kind of influence that the world's largest retailer has when they have these agreements with one of the largest soft drink manufacturers, with some of the largest food providers in the world?
Oh, absolutely. We belong to something called the Sustainability Consortium. And this is really an industry body that many retailers are part of and other suppliers. And the consortium tracks the environmental footprint of every category and every participating supplier. So that's a very measurable tool that we use with the suppliers to say, how are we doing on the major elements that are of concern? And these are environmental issues as well as social issues along every supply chain. So that's something that we're all working on together and jointly tracking. So when we pursue these kinds of projects, we can see the results in that index.
We've mentioned some of the larger companies that are represented here. Who else is here?
We have 3,000 suppliers with us. So you can imagine it spans the gamut from the world's largest corporations to our smallest suppliers and even people who don't yet supply to Walmart but would like to. So it's a wonderful opportunity to showcase that entrepreneurialism and that innovation. And you know, we're always looking for new ways to delight our customers. So this isn't just about big.
I don't mean this to sound cynical, but it's also good for the bottom line.
It's absolutely good for the bottom line. And sometimes people say, they almost talk about that as if it's a critique of companies pursuing this. You know, so people may say, well, you're just doing this because it's good for your business. Well, of course, I firmly believe it needs to be good for business as well as good for society, and that overlap has huge scope for progress. If we were going to only do things that were bad for everyone's business, you know, ultimately there'd be a limit to how much of that you could do. So, I mean, obviously, there are always going to be things we do that maybe aren't really helping the P&L, but they're necessary. But in the main, most of what we're talking about is what's going to allow us as people on this planet to be able to eat and wear clothing and have products for our entertainment and our households that are going to be sustainable for all of us.
Kathleen McLaughlin is the president of the Walmart Foundation and the senior vice president of sustainability at Walmart. She talked to me yesterday at the John Q. Hammond Center in Rogers as part of the Walmart Sustainability Product Expo. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Kyle Kellums.
It is Wednesday, April 30th, 2014, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Christina Thomas.
And joining us now is Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Well, Antoinette, it's time for us to say it.
I know. I don't understand how it's the last
day. I don't understand how it's the last day of April. Time flies.
I know. It's because you keep me so busy with these events.
Oh, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Well, there's no alliteration today.
Okay.
This is Vocal Wednesday.
I like vocal.
Because it's time for the spring ACO Chorale concert.
Mm.
And I want you to not think that because this is at ACO, you won't love it. It's not just a community chorus that sings off key. They're really good. Denise Parkhurst has them doing some really cool stuff. The central piece for this concert is called South African Trilogy. It's a series of songs of protest and praise from the time of apartheid and the imprisonment of Nelson Mandela, sung in Afrikaans and in English, and accompanied by African drums.
Here in Arkansas.
That's pretty different. They're also doing a Canadian folk song titled Soldier, Won't You Marry Me, a Celtic celebration called River Song with mandolin and flute, and Waiting for the Light to Shine from Big River. They usually do some Broadway stuff because they're tuning up their vocal pipes for the ACO Summer Musical, which this year, in case you haven't heard, will be Sound of Music. So there's your Wednesday secret. The concert is at 3 o'clock on Sunday at the Art Center in Springdale. Tickets are $7 to $12, and you can call for reservations at 751-5441.
Becca Martin Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. Social studies lessons from school days of the past were often to memorize a map or a catchy song to remember state capitals. Student teachers at the University of Arkansas are learning methods to take curriculum and turn it into engaging and entertaining lessons for elementary age children. Juniors in the Integrated Social Studies Methods course have spent the entire spring semester as interns at Ledbetter Intermediate in Farmington. To wrap up the school year, they have taken on a service learning project to teach the importance of community service. Angela Elsaw is the student's teacher and a clinical assistant professor in the College of Education at the U of A. She says service learning is more than just community service.
We have taken a need within our community and globally and really have attached curriculum to that program so that the students are in a classroom teaching children about the needs of other children, not only locally but globally as well, through actual curriculum content.
Her students are using the Common Core State Standards and the Arkansas Social Studies Framework to not only teach school children about social studies, but also about good citizenship skills. Elsaw has partnered with the University of Central Arkansas in Conway and a nonprofit organization that began there, Chicks for Children, for this project. The nonprofit is focused on helping those in Kenya by building feeding centers and orphanages, and focusing on sustainability by teaching the Kenyans how to take care of themselves for the long term by raising, taking care of, and harvesting eggs from chickens.
The chicken business is a business that the Kenyans have really taken ownership of. A chicken costs about $7 in Kenya, and they collect over 1,000 eggs a day, which can, you know, are sold for profit. And this has helped to sustain, you know, their financial responsibilities for the orphanage, for the feeding centers.
To turn the project into something interesting for the American school children, the curriculum really focuses on the needs of children in Kenya, in particular, those in the Kipsongo slums. Children who live in poverty without access to homes, food, or education, but kids who have many similarities to those in Farmington. The U of A interns are using cultural universals to teach economics, government, education, and the importance of giving back. Scott McCollum is one of the junior interns.
So we helped develop the curriculum, and the curriculum idea really was to help teach these kids about how to give back to people around the world, and especially people that are in need. The core of it is to give back to someone else outside of our area, right? So it teaches these kids, using our lessons, how to give to someone who is less fortunate than we are.
On a sunny Friday afternoon, the student teachers prepare to wrap up this service learning project. Though they have spent time at Ledbetter Intermediate throughout this spring semester, the Chicks for Children lessons have lasted just 1 week. The 375 fourth and fifth graders are split into two groups for an assembly. Just a quick presentation, and then they'll gather outside to do a special version of the chicken dance. McCollum welcomes the group he'll lead through a 15-minute PowerPoint presentation.
Hey, kids, how y'all doing?
Good.
Hey, welcome to our final presentation. And for the kids that were in my two classes, as promised, the lessons just keep getting better and better, okay? Today is no exception. So the first lesson, we kind of talked about keying the people. Then we wrote a letter. Hopefully all the pastors at least wrote a letter.
McCollum asked the group of students seated on the floor in front of him for a show of hands if they learned something new this week.
All right, right here, Brooke.
Okay, we learned that Kenya has forests and deserts.
Forests and deserts, yes.
Most of the people can't afford houses, so they live in the slums.
Most of the folks can't afford houses, they live in slums. That's right. Hopefully you guys actually saw some of the houses in the slums.
The people in Kenya get less than $2,000 a year.
That's right, and that's compared to how much in the U.S.?
So they make
about
$2,000?
$51,000, a huge difference there. How about one more?
They don't have much.
That's right. Well, you guys are just, y'all learned a lot.
As it turns out, students in Kenya are learning about these students here in Farmington, Arkansas, USA, at the same time. On this same day, as these students wrap up their Kenyan studies, so too are the Kenyan kids. As Beyond the Box and Fun are key for this service learning project, it ends with a song and dance. The 375 Ledbetter students congregate on the playground for their performance of the Chicken Dance, a popular dance in the United States which makes beaks, wings, tail feathers with claps. To make it unique for this project, the words, "I want to be a kid who cares about the kids in Africa," have been added. A natural leader, McCollum is quickly nominated by his fellow interns to lead the kids through the dance.
This way, all right? Here we go.
And just 8 hours later, the Kenyan children echoed the sentiment with a song, "I Want to Be a Kid Who Cares About the Kids in America." When McCollum becomes a full-time teacher, he hopes to use the methods and themes of this service learning project in his lesson plans.
The students love learning about how to help someone else. And so for us, it was pretty eye-opening to sit here and watch those kids just really engage and ask questions about how can we help, what can we do, and what can we do even beyond school, because they were asking questions like, what can we do in the summertime or next year or the following year? So you can see they're already thinking about what can they do in the future.
It is that community service sentiment that drives him to be a teacher, wanting to give back to his community. Gaining excitement through the kids' excitement as they learn new things. He says his students got the core idea that all it takes is a little bit to make a difference.
You know, I think a lot of these students and us too, we think, oh, we have to send money or we have to send clothes or whatever. Something as small as a book or a stuffed animal can make a difference, or something as small as a chicken, you know, can make a difference, right? So I think it's they got the idea that if we do it together as a group, it's a lot bigger and more meaningful than just one or two people doing it.
Taking that core idea and putting it into action, Ledbetter Intermediate Principal Julia Williams has been approached by the students to do something more.
They have been to us all week after these lessons have been taught, wanting to do something for these children in Kenya. And so we have agreed they're going to do a used book drive. And so they're going to start collecting books and they're going to send those over. So anyway, something great happened that was unexpected, and so we're just pleased to be a part of it.
The students will collect their used or no longer read books and send them to the Kenyan children they have just learned so much about. Williams says having the interns in her school is invaluable for the students, so they see the next step available to them in education, college, and thus setting goals for themselves, and perhaps to become teachers. She says the service learning project fits in perfectly with the social studies curriculum already being taught, as they both like to make connections to help the lessons sink in.
And so as we're learning about Arkansas and all of the economical entities in Arkansas, it's really neat to connect those to another country and show the contrast and compare and contrast those two things, what things are the same, what things are different. And that's a huge skill in fourth and fifth grade. And when we can make it more real, it's a lot easier for them to understand and learn.
For more information on the organization, visit chicksforchildren.org. This is Ozarks at Large.
Hi, my name is Paul, your host for the Generic Blues Show, where local and international artists get showcased for over 22 years. You know, anymore, the blues casts a wide net. As new generations emerge, the look and the sound of the blues continues to evolve. Tune in every Friday night at 9 o'clock to see what I've captured next on listener-supported KUAF. We'll see you then.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Christina Thomas. The Symphony of Northwest Arkansas presents its season finale concert May 10th at Walton Arts Center. Under the baton of maestro Paul Haas, the concert will feature Mozart's Hofner Symphony and Mahler's Symphony No. 1 in D major. Tickets available by calling 443-5600 or on the web at sonamusic.org.
Walton Arts Center welcomes national artists Sean Bitters, Joan Hall, and Laura Mority for the visual arts exhibition Translating Earth, Transforming Sea as part of the 5th Annual Artisphere Arts and Nature Festival. Translating Earth, Transforming Sea will be on display at Walton Arts Center in the Joy Pratt Markham Gallery from May 1st through June 21st. In conjunction with First Thursday in downtown Fayetteville, there will be an opening reception and curator talk this Thursday from 5 to 7 p.m. Translating Earth, Transforming Sea is comprised of sculptural transformations that take inspiration from geologic or oceanic change. More information is available at waltonartscenter.org.
University programs host the War and Peace Project through May 23rd in the Ann Kittrell Art Gallery at the Arkansas Union. University programs is thrilled to bring artwork of Lola Botzel and her team Tolstoy to the Ann Kittrell Art Gallery. Botzel initiated the idea of War and Peace, this project, in 2009 and completed. It comprises over 750 individual collages. The exhibit is open Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. There will be a collage-making workshop tomorrow from noon to 2 in the Connections Lounge and a reception tomorrow evening from 6 to 7:30 in the Ann Kittrell Art Gallery. This event is free to current University of Arkansas students who pay the student activities fee. If you need accommodations due to disability, please contact the Office of Student Activities at osa@uark.edu or 575-5255.
Next month, the Arkansas State Dental Association will hold its annual Arkansas Mission of Mercy in Springdale. Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis recently spoke with one of the dentists participating in the free dental clinic, and he has this report.
Dwight Duckworth has been a dentist for 25 years. In his Springdale practice, he sees somewhere between 20 and 25 patients in a given day. But during the 8th annual Arkansas Mission of Mercy, exponentially more patients will move through the doors of the Northwest Arkansas Convention Center. The event's location rotates among 5 locations throughout the state each year. Dr. Duckworth is not only a dentist, but he is also the local chairman for the Springdale Mission of Mercy Clinic. He says logistics are a big concern when organizing the event.
We have to find a place to hold the event. We have to rent a whole bunch of dental chairs and dental equipment like lights and things like that, and we have to have those shipped in via trucks, and we have to coordinate the dates with graduations from high school and college and all other kinds of events so we don't get people spread too thinly.
Because the clinic's organizers expect to see about 2,200 patients during the two-day clinic, about 160 dentists and nearly 1,000 other volunteers are needed in order to make the event a success. Duckworth says that much work must be done before the first patient steps through the door on Friday, May 16th.
On Thursday, there will be forklifts unloading a lot of crates, people opening crates, setting up dental chairs, lights. We have to put plumbing inside the convention center because we have to have suction. We have to have water lines run everywhere. We have to have water, a lot of electricity. And then a number of us will be on site probably around 4:30 a.m. on Friday and Saturday to make sure that we troubleshoot everything and have everything ready to roll.
He says that while the first patients are seen at around 6 o'clock in the morning, some of those patients begin lining up outside the clinic site before 4 o'clock the previous afternoon, camping out overnight to ensure they are served early in the morning.
Once they come in, they will fill out a health questionnaire, and then we'll go through medical triage where we'll have nurses taking blood pressures, taking vitals, checking the patients out. We'll have at least one physician, usually two or three on site, that will go through and handle any type of medical things that might be going on, like someone who has a blood sugar that's out of control or someone who has really high blood pressure. Then once they're cleared medically, they'll go through dental triage where dentists will actually sit down and talk to them and find out what their chief complaint is, and it will be our objective to address that for them.
At that point, the dentists start working on the patient, and that work isn't just limited to filling cavities or cleaning teeth.
Our chief objective is to get people out of pain. So there will be a number of extractions, so we will remove a good number of teeth over those 2 days. We will also be doing a lot of fillings. There'll be pediatric dentists there to take care of the kiddos, and there will be hygienists there that will be cleaning teeth. So we actually offer a pretty good array of services for doing mission work.
After a patient's treatment is complete, they will receive the necessary medication at a pharmacy station and then be released to go home. Through the entire process, a lay volunteer escorts the patient through each station in the clinic. While he and other dentists are likely missing out on potential revenue from their own private practices by taking part in the 2-day clinic, Duckworth says the sacrifice is an easy one to make.
The blessings that we receive as practitioners and assistants, all the volunteers receive so much more spiritually than we give. And there are a lot of people that are out there that have been in pain for months, and it falls under what we do to help people. So for us to give back to the community for a couple of days, it's a very rewarding experience spiritually for us. But more importantly, it's the right thing to do.
Last year, the Mission of Mercy was held in Arkadelphia, and in other years, the free clinic is held in Jonesboro, Little Rock, or Monticello. While he admits Northwest Arkansas as a whole may be more economically advantaged than other areas of the state, Duckworth says that the greater number of people in this area means that there are still plenty of people who need dental care but can't normally afford it. But just because the clinic is held in Northwest Arkansas doesn't mean that this area's residents are the only ones who will show up for the event.
Last time we were up here, we saw people from 5 different states. We had some people who drove up from Dallas, Texas to have some work done. It's just a wonderful blessing that we have to be able to help take care of people.
There are no income or eligibility requirements for patients seeking treatment during the free clinic. To date, the Arkansas Mission of Mercy has seen more than 12,000 patients who have received nearly $6 million worth of dental procedures. To be able to see more than 2,000 patients in 2 days, the Arkansas Mission of Mercy has a handful of corporate partners, such as Delta Dental of Arkansas and the Walmart Foundation, but the annual clinic is also supported by an army of volunteers. When I spoke with him last week, Duckworth said that organizers were still looking for several dentists, nurses, and lay volunteers to help staff the event. To volunteer, visit ArkansasMissionOfMercy.org. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Timothy Dennis.
I'm Margaret John Hoyt. Join me Saturday for a live Metropolitan Opera broadcast of I Puritani, Bellini's romantic drama set against the backdrop of political intrigue in Puritan England. We'll hear the network broadcast debut of a thrilling new star, soprano Olga Perratiatko, as Elvira, the young bride whose betrayal leads to one of opera's greatest mad scenes. Tenor Lawrence Brownlee is Arturo, who's torn between his love for Elvira and his duty to his country. Baritone Mariusz Kwiecień is his rival, Ricardo, and Michele Pertuzzi is Sir Giorgio Walton. Maestro Michele Mariotti conducts this gorgeous bel canto score. At intermission, we'll go backstage to hear from the stars, and we'll bring you the final opera quiz of the season. Don't miss Bellini's I Puritani, Saturday, on the Toll Brothers Metropolitan Opera International Radio Network.
The Met Opera begins Saturday at noon on 91.3 FM.
This spring, a Hollywood casting agent started soliciting Eureka Springs residents to appear in a reality television series about the town. As Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, an unknown number of Eurekans have signed releases to appear on a project they know little about.
Most reality shows push extreme competition, Survivor, Big Brother, Fear Factor, and Top Model. Hollywood casting director Duran Ophir, who heads popular productions, casts unknown extreme characters for highly successful reality shows, including the now-defunct Jersey Shore and Rich Kids of Beverly Hills, currently broadcasting on E! Network. And along with 20 other reality projects in Ophir's pipe, he set his sights on casting Eureka Springs. While Ophir failed to respond to queries for this report, co-executive producer Spencer Stander did.
The idea is to find, you know, people who are just extremely entertaining and interesting in their own lives and, you know, hoping to not have to script and just, you know, let reality be actual.
Spencer Stander recently cut ties with IFC Network, where he produced reality programming centered on things like gardening, home renovation, candy making, and travel. He's now producing for HGTV his latest Crowded House, a realtor reality show. And he says the Eureka Springs series will place the town in a good light.
It's the type of reality that we want to produce. It's not, you know, salacious or dumb. It's intriguing.
The network, however, has final say, which Stander declined identifying. The Eureka Springs project can be found on Duran Ophir's casting website, along with other projects, including Party Down South, Dating Diaries of Curvy Girls, and Tattoo Nightmares. Reality programming is not reality. Characters are often coached and drama concocted. They can be really cheap to make, but have high commercial value for show producers. But Spencer Stander insists the Eureka series will be created in the image of Twin Peaks, Northern Exposures, and Portlandia, all cult favorites.
I would love to push the boundaries with a show like this, of what can be possible with reality television, and just allow people to be who they are. And I think that requires, you know, a broad variety of a cast. So that's why we're putting such efforts into finding the perfect cast for the show.
Both Spencer's and Ophir's teams have been grooming Eureka prospects using Facebook and through word-of-mouth referrals, finding residents like Caitlin Cantell, who operates a tattoo parlor in town.
They Skyped me like 11 times the other day.
Leaving messages, she said. She's had time to do one interview so far. She's not agreed to the website release because she's not clear about the tone of the project.
They just assume that we all want that 5 minutes of fame, whether it be good or bad. I need to know how you're going to make my town look. I need to know how you're going to make my friends seem. You know, are you going to pin us against each other?
Others, too, worry in public, on Facebook and GeekFest, Eureka's online forum, that the project will be trashy and stigmatize their town. Melanie Pierce is a member of a local burlesque troupe. She did sign the release and hopes for a good outcome.
So that was my main concern about everything, is I just want to make sure they pick the right individuals to showcase how awesome our town is.
Gina Galena, a crochet artist, is also interested but has not yet signed on.
No. I've done two Skype interviews. They're just mainly interested of, you know, how our community works together. And obviously, as you know, there's so many different characters here, and artists and musicians and writers and workers and all the characters that make up this town, which they say they have in other big cities, you know, but we're more condensed as a smaller town. And that's what they're interested in, you know. And I also told myself, too, that before I sign any contracts, you know, I want to make sure that that's their goal and, you know, and that I want to be able to leave at any given time if I feel that this is getting, you know, they want to make fun of us for being hillbillies or whatever. I don't know.
Producers are in town this week scouting Eureka and plan to return later this month to cast in earnest. Mike Maloney, City Advertising and Promotions Commission Director, has yet to speak with them, which is unusual, he says.
Well, you know, at this point, I don't know enough about what this particular venture is wanting to do. The only thing that I can say from you know, the standpoint of what would we want out of it is what we don't want out of it.
Nor has anyone attempted to contact the city, Maloney says. But he did say film and television projects can bring much-needed revenue to town. A Fayetteville attorney who did not want to be named in this report looked over the internet casting release. She says those who click on it agree to work without compensation at their own risk and are stripped of any and all rights related to production and distribution of the show. And any disputes with the producers would have to be litigated in New York City. Producer Spencer Stander, however, did say that those cast would be compensated, but would not elaborate further.
Well, my name is Bo Satori. I've lived in Eureka Springs for almost 38 years. I heard about the reality show casting in an email that was sent to me by the people doing the casting. I had not heard anything on the street prior to that.
Bo Satori says Eureka needs publicity and to add to its resume, so has been encouraging locals to sign up.
I asked them about any type of series treatment they may have, and there wasn't really anything there. I think they are in the stages of developing the concept. So they're looking at where a story is, they're looking at the real characters, and then they're going to see what emerges. So everything is still pretty much up in the air as far as how it will take shape.
Satori has had some experience in vetting film projects for Eureka, having traveled to L.A. back when he was mayor in the late 1980s. He helped bring Pass the Ammo to town, a satirical comedy about Southern tele-evangelism starring Tim Curry, Bill Paxton, and Annie Potts.
Then we had Crystal, which was done after I was mayor. But still, I was involved with the producers and director of that in that they were asking for help and advice and insight. And I actually even had a full screenshot in the finished movie.
A 2004 hillbilly noir drama, which also failed at the box office, this one starring Billy Bob Thornton. That was the last major feature film project in Eureka Springs. Bo Satori says he's not interested in being cast in the Eureka Springs reality series. Town Alderman James DeVito and his spouse Teresa, who staged Eureka's first independent film festival last winter, were the first to encourage the reality show producers to come to town. Yet even they admit in an email for this report that they don't know if the project is legit. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
To learn more, visit castingeureka.com.
KUAF is supported by Arcom Printing, located on the hillside just east of the Township and College intersection in Fayetteville. Arcom Printing provides printing, copying, and digital output services. ArcomPrinting.com or 444-7711. Support for KUAF also comes from the Fayetteville Underground, promoting the visual arts in Northwest Arkansas, supporting artists working to the highest standards, and contributing to the advancement of Fayetteville as a destination city for the arts. Information regarding art shows, concerts, and more available at FayettevilleUnderground.com.
The Rogers Historical Museum presents Hog Wild, Our Area's Love Affair with the Pig, on exhibit now through August 9th. This exhibit features the museum's collection and private collections reflecting the broad appeal of the pig in Arkansas, from farming, sausage making, art, and razorback memorabilia. Located in historic downtown Rogers, 621-1154, or rogersarkansas.com/museum for more information.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Siloam Springs.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Christina Thomas.
We'll end today's show with some music from Back Road Anthem. This is their song Back Road Ride, which was recorded inside our studios last May. The band will be performing with Barrett Baber tonight at 9 o'clock at George's for a tornado relief concert. Tickets are $10. More information, georgesmajesticlounge.com. Thanks again for listening and have a fantastic Wednesday.
Listen to the birds sing. Gonna carve out you and me underneath that old oak tree.